The next matter on for oral argument this morning is in the matter of the proposed closing of Rolling Stone Community School. Looks like only the bride's side has come into the court so far, so I'll wait.
I'm ready to proceed.
Again, the next matter on for oral argument this morning is the matter of the proposed closing of Rolling Stone Community School. And it's case number 18-799. Council, each side will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes to relator's counsel if you choose to use that time for rebuttal. Please be mindful of the timing restrictions. Those are indicated in a clock and a lighting system in the podium, which, by the way, you can lower or raise to match your height at your convenience. There's a button right in front that allows you to do so. Please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument. And with that, relator's counsel, whenever you're ready to proceed, you may. And also, in the course of your argument, obviously, in addition to the substance of the case, the matter of the a motion to dismiss has been briefed, and counsel can argue if you wish on that subject as well. Counsel for a relator, you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honors, Counsel, and I appreciate your consideration of this issue, which is very important to everyone living in the district, the school district in Winona, all the parents and teachers. And I'm going to spend my oral argument focusing on what I think is the key issue.
I'm sorry, did you state your name for us yet?
I think I didn't. It's Lucas Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson.
I'm going to focus on what I think is the key issue in this case, and that is that there's a lack of substantial evidence supporting the school board's decision to close Madison and Rolling Stone elementary schools. I think there's a lot of briefing on the legal standards, and I think it's well briefed. I think fundamentally there's not a lot of disagreement about the key issues. There has to be substantial evidence supporting this decision. It's the district's burden to produce a record that reflects that. And they have not done that here. Now, I think my client and the court are fortunate here because I think there's a case that directly controls the situation. That case is the 1986 case of Kelly versus Independent School District number 623. And the key holding of that case is that it is not enough to just show a general reason to close a general reason to close schools. It's not enough to just say that there's budget problems, closing schools will save money, therefore we must close schools.
But counsel, here, what I saw was some evidence, and you may disagree, there could be evidence on both sides of this, but I saw some evidence, and you seem to admit there are real cost savings achieved through closing these two specific schools. Why isn't that enough to meet the substantial evidence test, setting aside everything else, even under the Kelly case?
Because there are always cost savings for closing a school. Whenever you close a school, you don't have to pay the particular costs that are associated with operating that school.
I want to push back on that. I mean, you still have to educate those students, and during that education provide, you know, a building and instruction.
Well, that what you're describing, Your Honor, would be some sort of comparison of the costs of closing the school versus the costs of educating these students in another way. That sort of comparison does not exist on the record. All that there is on the record is that there is savings A, B, and C because you don't have to pay the janitors and you don't have to bus kids to this particular school. But you could say that the same thing, you could produce the same sort of itemized list about closing any school. If there was, now, the question I think you're raising is that truly, broadly speaking, a savings? There is no analysis of that sort of comparison. They are not saying that, you know, they have not analyzed the alternative and presented these savings as against, say, closing another school. They've just pulled out these particular things that, again, would apply in literally any school closing case.
But each decision, written decision, there's two of them by the school board, has particular particular dollar amounts for particular with a description of the nature of the savings, whether it's based on transportation, the building, staffing, and so on. I mean, on its face, each order it looks pretty substantial. I mean, it adds up to six-figure numbers, perhaps even, you know, higher totals. I mean, are you saying that there's not evidence to support those numbers? Is that your argument?
No, that's not the argument. It's not calling into question those particular numbers.
The calculations are accurate. The underlying sort of support for those numbers is present. Is that true?
I have no reason to question that those numbers. Well, there will be some numbers that I quibble with, but generally, I think what you're speaking about are the particular cost savings associated with each school. And there's, you know, my client is not contesting that there's not substantial evidence in the record for those. But the issue is, and this is where Kelly is key, and I think they have a very similar situation in Kelly. There is a significant record in Kelly. It compares different costs across the schools. I'll quote. The record contains several reports from district administration on the cost of operations and comparison of the two high school facilities. That record does not, however, contain any analysis of that data. And the data itself does not reflect any obvious reasons for choosing to close one facility rather than the other. So, for instance, data on, you know, if one particular school stood out for excessive cost per student or something like that. There's nothing, there's no analysis like that in the findings and conclusions. And when you actually go to the record doesn't have, there's nothing that stands out in the record that says these schools have particularly bad numbers in any way.
I thought that there was evidence in the record about cost per pupil. There, I can't remember one of the schools. Isn't that evidence that's specific
there
to
is,
those
Your Honor.
Schools? Or at least
there
one
is.
Of them.
I will point out at the start that that is not evidence that is cited anywhere in the findings and conclusions of the district.
I understand, but it is
in
the record.
It is in the record. And it doesn't, if you look, there's two places where there's cost per pupil in the record. It's at document 36. In the record, and it has, and this is from 2016, and of the five elementary schools, it has Madison, which was closed, as having the fourth best cost per pupil of those five schools. It's a detailed.
What do you mean fourth best? Highest or lowest?
I mean it's the lowest, fourth. It's good. It's low cost per pupil.
Good for the taxpayer.
Second best. Yep, good for the taxpayer, correct. And Rolling Stone third, right in the middle. Now, counsel for the district, again, this is not cited in their findings and conclusion, has pointed to a separate document, which is from 2017, in which, in fact, Madison is the highest. But Madison is the highest by a sliver. They are all so similar, and there's no evidence that they considered it.
But isn't that what school boards should be doing? They're the elected officials. Here's evidence kind of on one hand about Madison's cost, different evidence perhaps on the other. They make those decisions. Why? What case law is out there that should suggest that we should overturn that decision?
They're absolutely right. They should make that decision. They should make a record of the fact that they made it, and it should be based on substantial evidence. They didn't consider that. This is post hoc justification of their attorneys combing through the record. And they never would have used that as a basis to close the schools because it doesn't make any sense because the data on the record doesn't support that these schools have higher cost per pupil.
Mr. Tobes, I think
if you look at the record, I think that's clear.
I know you want to talk about substantial evidence, but I do want to ask you about whether to address the mootness issue. And I know that there have been briefs filed on both of this, but I was actually rather taken by the footnote one in the appellant's brief where you said this action, you know, by the board to sell the school buildings may preclude any meaningful relief through this appeal or through election of a new school board. So, I mean, aren't you there saying, yes, because the buildings are a school, buildings have been sold, that very well may preclude any meaningful relief. And why should we be considering this on the merits when the school buildings have been sold?
Well, I hope it does not preclude meaningful relief. And I think there's a couple of reasons why you should determine that it doesn't. One is that I think this court does have the power to reverse the sales. I think that might be a somewhat dramatic step. But I don't see how you can have the power to review these school board closing decisions if you don't also have the power to reverse the decisions that were made to implement those decisions.
I think you're talking about the argument you made at pages 5 and 6 of your response to the motion, is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct.
You didn't give us any case law or any legal authority for that.
I don't think the specific issue has come up, and I do not have a direct case law on point.
What would be the basis of the source of this authority?
I think if you don't have that authority, then you've completely neutered your ability to review school board decisions.
Right, but that's a logical reason why we might be so empowered by an entity empowering us, but what is the source of the power? Are you suggesting it's some type of an inherent authority of this court?
I think it follows from the authority that is already established to review these decisions. I think it's a necessary consequence.
Am I correct? I'm going to refer to your response to the motion again. It seems as though rather early in your response, you effectively concede that circumstances have changed to make it effective relief impossible, but that we should invoke one of the exceptions to the mootness doctrine. I mean, do I understand you correctly?
No, I think even if you do not reverse the sale, I think there is effective relief by saying this decision was not based on substantial evidence and you need to produce one that is. And you could take the position that they need to do that now in 2019 with the facts on the ground, which include the fact that the real estate has been sold. But there are a number of issues, including any of the negative consequences of these decisions on education quality for the students, that have not been considered at all. And the district, the citizens of the district, are owed a record supported by substantial evidence that addresses these things. Again, it's quoting Kelly again, the school board's decision here had substantial effect on the communities as a whole. Such a decision must be supported by a record that enables meaningful review, a record that includes standards and findings which demonstrate that the school board carefully considered all the relevant problems and alternatives. A remand is necessary so that such an adequate record may be developed. And again, in Kelly, on remand, the school board, their hands were not tied as to what to do. It was a question of which of two high schools, and the Court of Appeals did not say, you must close this one and not the other. But it did say that you got to get your findings based on substantial evidence on the record.
Maybe I'm interrupting you. Go ahead and complete your thought. But
my complete thought, I guess, I was going to go to the fact that there's a substantial amount of time in the briefing that's addressed to procedural issues, and I think there are there are, in Kelly and in Bena Parent Association, another school closing decision, 381 Northwest 2nd, 517, they talk about the procedure and certain things that are not necessarily required, but that are sort of best practices. Having an independent hearing officer, having an independent study. And in Moberg, they talk about, Kelly talks about the earlier Moberg case where they actually had a hearing for each comparable school in the district so that the various schools could be compared. So they did the procedure, you know, here instead of twice, they did it five times. And they didn't require those things, but sort of pointed them out as best practices, and those are all missing. We talk about the superintendent's role, and the practical effect of the procedure was that only one side was presented, and I think that's reflected in the record that was created.
Seems to me that the mootness, I'm sorry, just it seems to me the mootness issue should be based upon what relief is requested. And I don't know what was requested in Kelly, but in this case, if I'm looking at the conclusion of your brief on page 38, it says, Relator urges the court to reverse the order of the school board closing Madison and Rolling Stone and to remand the case to the district with instructions to reopen the schools with due consideration to maintaining continuity and so on. I mean, that seems like you're not if we take that conclusion seriously, you're not asking us to remand for reconsideration, but with specific directives to take the contrary action.
I think that would be the strongest stated form of our relief, but relief short of that would still provide my client with effective relief, including relief that didn't bind the court below.
Have you asked for alternative relief? That's
I believe we have at other points in the briefing, and I do believe it's cited in the response brief.
I recall that as well.
Counsel, one further question. You raised the issue about the role of the superintendent, and in your brief you make a lot of the fact that the superintendent was both, in your words, I believe, a advocate and a advisor to the board. And I want to know, didn't the board have a lawyer or get legal advice through this process? But I only want to know that if it's in the record somewhere. It was hard for me looking through the record to see that. Because a lot of the cases you rely upon, it's like where lawyers are having two hats on. And here we're talking about a superintendent, not a lawyer.
I do not believe there was someone that was retained to present, independently retained to present the various alternatives. That's I specifically as to a lawyer, I just have to defer to the record in the briefing. And I will reserve the rest of my time for response.
5 minutes is allotted for that purpose. Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
Good morning. Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Christian Schaefer, counsel. I'm here today on behalf of the respondent, the Winona School District. Along with me is my associate, Nathan Shepard, and we have some representatives from the district as well. We have the superintendent, Rich Dahman, and board members, Nancy Denzer, and Steve Shield, is joining me as well. I'd like to start with the mootness argument, and you asked asked some questions about that, and I think I have some answers for you. Judge Ross, you asked what the basis of the authority would be to award to go and initiate the sale at this point, and our contention, of course, is there isn't one judicially. Certiorari review is limited to the record before it. This court, in the order denying the stay, has already said the decision to close the buildings is not before the court in this matter. You'd have to, and it's not anywhere in the record, and it couldn't be in the record because it was decided, the sales occurred and the bids were opened and all that took place in the summer following the decision to close the schools.
Is there a mechanism by which a challenger could avoid the mootness issue if the school district does what this school district did, which is to sort of a double move, close the schools immediately upon the sale, closing of the schools, sell the building?
I would suggest there are three mechanisms, in fact. The Moberg case talks briefly in the facts about a writ of prohibition and an injunction. Both of those were available. In this case, the relator moved to stay the decision to close the schools, but then did not appeal that decision to this court. The court, in the order denying the stay for a sale of the school, said, the Chief Judge said in the order, that a stay of the decision to close the schools would necessarily prevent the sale of the school. So those three options all would have been available, an injunction in district court, a writ of prohibition, or a perfected stay.
Why wasn't the a notice of Liz Pendens, which they did file, an appropriate way to draw a potential buyer's attention to the fact that, look, there's this dispute going on, so you're purchasing this with eyes wide open?
So we actually are in the middle of litigating the notice of Liz Pendens. There's a separate district court action pending. The district has brought a slander of title action about that. We assert that Liz Pendens reserved for individuals with an actual property interest. So that will be decided. And I think going back to what I said, theoretically, at some point in the future, a district court sitting in a declaratory judgment action perhaps could say, yep, you lost to the Court of Appeals, yep, the notice of Liz Pendens is valid, yes, this contract is invalid, but this court sitting here today is limited to the record before it, and the separation of powers doctrine in certiorari, the review is limited. So is effective relief out there somewhere possibly? Of course, I would say no, but
What would be the effect of if the district is unsuccessful in its slander of title action?
Well, at this point, the effect on the district, Your Honor, is at this point the properties have been sold, and I think it would depend largely on the outcome of this appeal. If we're unsuccessful in the slander of title action and the court reverses and remands for reconsideration or reverses and says you have to reopen the school until there's further reconsideration, we would have to figure out how to, would the property be... would we have to sue to break the contract, I suppose? Is the contract just invalid? There may be an argument about race notice and all that and the Liz Pendens and what effect it has in a separate action.
Is the period of time either procedurally or temporally expired for the alternative remedies available that you say weren't exercised by the relator in this case?
And in this case, Your Honor, I would say yes. The sale of the building, the closing on the building, the buildings were closed on. That's all briefed in our motion to dismiss. That transfer title that prevented the district on its face from reopening the schools, it's too late to stay a decision to sell a school or too late to get an injunction to prevent a sale once the sale is complete. There was a period of time when a purchase agreement was in effect and there was a closing date set, that time would have been available. The last property didn't close until December. That's why we didn't brief it until December. That was, shortly after the closing. So there were months and months and months when it was possible to prevent the sale.
Are the purchasers parties to the slander of title action?
One of them is. One of them recently joined. The other one has, I don't remember the exact term, but has authorized us to proceed on the purchaser's behalf. Assignment, I believe, is the form.
Counsel, if I could take you to this substantial evidence question that's before us. I'm cognizant, as appellant reminded us, that when we're looking at the record, we need to see whether there's substantial evidence supports the closure of that particular school.
Yes.
And one of the things that when I looked at raised questions in my mind when I was looking at the board's findings so that was the focus on enrollment and the declining enrollment. But as appellant points out, the declining enrollment was for K-12 education overall, not focused on this particular population, and not, at least in those findings, those particular schools. Could you address that for me, why that's not a problem?
Sure. It's not a problem for a couple of reasons. First, in the record, I believe it's the superintendent's presentation, I believe it's document 72. Presents the K-4 enrollment. It does not specify these two schools in particular, but it is K-4 enrollment. Relator interprets that and says, yes, K-4 enrollment declining now means it's a high school enrollment later and tends to stabilize, but for the immediate future, it shows a decrease in K-4 enrollment, which is the population served by these schools.
Is there a place in the record that talks about the enrollment decline specifically at these schools?
That I don't believe specifically at these schools, Your Honor. However, I would also point out that in Moberg and in Bina and in 834 Voice, declining enrollment district-wide was sufficient justification in part for the for the decision to close particular schools. And the reason for that is declining enrollment across the district is what brings down the funding, and that is in the record. The declining enrollment affected the funding, and we find ourselves in a $1.2 million budget shortfall, and we have to find that money. And it doesn't matter if it's this building that caused the shortfall, we can realize the savings by closing this building. And we can, in fact, realize $10 million in savings by closing these two buildings and not paying the deferred maintenance on them. So, and that's one of those political alternatives that the school board had to raise. And there is in the record, in the it's the packet for the 2019 Budget Reduction Committee, document 72. It was presented to the board. It's referenced in finding 23 or 24 of both resolutions that talks about the impact of all of the enrollment. It talks about the class sizes and how students will be able to be met from these schools in the new buildings, things like that. It goes very much into the weeds of that. And it also, the committee considered many alternatives and many proposals to get there, closing these schools, cutting administrative salaries. If you read through the list, there are some, you know, arbitrarily cutting teachers' pay that the little comment just says, not legal, can't do it. So they considered every alternative they could, and the alternatives that they were looking at were cutting sports programs or art programs or music programs, and that is the political function of the school board. They had to weigh a difficult choice between, do we close the schools that have the highest cost per pupil per square foot, and the highest square foot per pupil. Rolling Stone has the lowest enrollment overall. It was only 60-some students at the time. Do we close these buildings that are not serving the population as a whole to save this money and move the kids somewhere else? Or do we close programs that serve the district as a whole and are appealing to our community members to save this money, or some combination thereof? And that difficult political decision is why this court in 834 Voice and Bina and the Moberg Supreme Court decision says there is deference to that decision. It's not this court's role to sit as a super school board and substitute its judgment. And I believe it's in 834 Voice where the court said, the question of whether the school closing was a good one is not before the court on certiorari. And to me, that really just rings home. That's not the deciding factor. Could you have done it differently? Could the board have looked at different evidence? Yes, but the evidence that is in the record, including that budget reduction committee packet, all of the documents cited in finding 23, the K-12 enrollment summary, the budget reduction committee prioritized list, financial savings summary, the superintendent's presentation, all of those things support the conclusion that closing these particular schools, this is not, is necessary and practicable. Sorry, I finished my sentence. This is not the Kelly situation where the court noted that the school board, you know, equivocated and said basically one school was as good as another one. This was specific findings related to these specific programs. It was the highest excess square footage per student, which relates to that deferred maintenance. It was the cost per pupil in some cases. It was all of these things that are cited in the record related to this school in particular. It is not Kelly where they came down to kind of a coin toss between two schools and said, let's close this one.
Counsel, could you address the question I asked counsel for appellant about the role of the superintendent as both the an advocate and an advisor to the board? I mean, I must say, the optics of the superintendent staying at his own podium, I think, his own higher place, versus everyone else coming up for the 3 minutes, could be troubling if he was also the only advisor to the board.
Well, I mean, he's not the only advisor to the board.
That was part of my question.
I do advise the board, and I have provided legal advice, and of course, all that advice is during client privilege.
Is it a matter of the record somewhere that you were advising the board?
I'm not entirely sure. I will tell you there's a number on the back of the findings in each one. It's RRM followed by a number. That's my office number. I wrote the findings, not the superintendent. So that's an error in there.
Is that in the record anywhere?
No.
That would be...
There are records. There are records meeting notices closed for attorney-client privilege discussion. I don't think we included those. Necessarily, I can check that, but I don't think my name shows up. I don't advocate a position. I'm there to advise. But in any event, even if I weren't, even if the superintendent was the only representative, the superintendent has a statutory duty to make recommendations to the school board. It's in the statute about the superintendent's role. I think it would be sort of abrogating the legislation to say, except in this case. You need to make recommendations to the school board, but you can't do it in a school closing case. That doesn't appear anywhere. And in fact, if you look at all the school closing cases, again, it's Moberg, it's Bina, it's 834 Voice, they all mention the superintendent made a presentation. And in the Bina case, and I think in 834 Voice also, one of them specifically says that the board's findings mirror the superintendent's recommendation. This is the standard procedure. This is what happens. The administration is tasked with coming up with a way of saving money. The administration says we need to save this much money, and I think closing a school is the way to do it. I propose it, and then we have a hearing on it. And in the Kelly case, before you get to the substantial evidence part of the Kelly case, there was a challenge to the school board had actually already voted to close the schools as part of adopting a budget before it had the hearing. And this court said, yeah, okay, they did that, but they could have changed their mind. They had the required hearing. Public input is only one thing to consider. This is not a case like the medical license revocation Supreme Court case or the teacher termination case in Schmidt, where there is a solidly protected due process right. There is no due process right to attend a particular school. The school board has the authority to furnish school housings. The only right is the right to be heard. And to the extent there is a right, the legislature prescribed the process, and the process is notice and opportunity to be heard. There is no dispute, I think, in the reply brief, anyway. Certainly no dispute if you look at the record that the meeting notice was proper. It was served 2 weeks out, published 2 weeks out, rather, and contained all the required information. There is no dispute that anyone who attended was welcome to speak. We accepted accepted paper reports up through the March 29th final decision. Nobody was turned away, and the 3 minutes was squarely rejected in 834 Voice. With regard to the dual role, I think it is also addressed in Bina. While Bina talked largely about a hearing officer, there is a paragraph on Bina that says exactly what Relator is saying here about the involvement of an attorney. They questioned the attorney both being at the school closing and his partner, in that case, being at the hearing, and you know, one advising and one being at the hearing. It raised that specter of impropriety. And the court said, this isn't Schmidt, this isn't a teacher termination, this isn't judge, jury, and executioner. There is no appearance of impropriety. And again, it's based on that lesser concern or the lack of concern that the board would pick on or arbitrarily pick on a particular person, that sort of lesser due process, right, as well as the school board's discretion in that case to manage its properties. So, again, the legislature has provided the process. The process was followed. The record supports the findings with substantial evidence. As the Moberg case said, those two things are satisfied. That satisfies the statute and renders the decision proper. I have about 30 seconds left. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebuttal.
I just have three things very quickly. One, you'd asked about a decline as to these specific schools. It is in the record. There's not a decline at these schools. It's document number 5 at page 5. Madison's actually up about 30 students from 166 a decade ago to 197 today, or last year, when it was still open. Rolling Stone is about flat. That's a document number 5 at page 6. In the record, at about 69 students. I know the school board did not consider that. Also, I want to point out that it's in the record that the savings of closing these schools, it is about $500,000 of that is teachers and specialists that they don't have to pay. There is no finding about the negative educational impact of that. That is in the record at document 89 at page 9 for Madison and document 95 at page 9 for Rolling Stone. Again, the negative side of these changes is completely ignored. And finally, another issue that was ignored, there's no finding about this. The decision to close schools means you lose parents, means you lose students. In their findings and conclusions, they make it very clear that school revenue is all about how many students you have. There is no discussion that revenue would decline because we're closing schools and losing students. Again, the other side was completely ignored. The decisions, and I'll just repeat once more, I'm a broken record, but this case is Kelly. I don't see how this case can be affirmed without overruling it. I think it's just the same. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson, Mr. Schaefer, and I'm sure all counsel involved. The matter is well briefed. Thank you for your briefing. Thank you for your oral argument today. Very helpful to us. We will issue our opinion within the statutory period. The matter is under advisement. We do have two more cases on for oral argument this morning. However, interactive television will need to be set up for those oral arguments. So for the moment, we are in recess.